All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Daily Faceoff podcast comes courtesy of the Nation Network. Here's your host, Brock Segan, with Dylan D. Berthium and Michael Beebs Bondi.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Season 9, Episode 36 of the DFO Fantasy Podcast, presented to you by Betway. If you're going to place a bet, bet on Betway. Please play responsibly. Ontario only, must be 19 years of age or older. I'm your host, Brock Segan. With me, as always, we have Dylan D. Berthium and Michael Beebs Bondi. Fellas, we have made it to the final Fantasy Hockey regular season episode of the season. It has been a long ride this year. It's been a long 9 years of talking about fantasy hockey, but hopefully the listeners have enjoyed the ride again this year. Hopefully we have lots of people still tuning in and have fantasy hockey championships hinging on the words that we are about to speak, because as far as I can tell, the listenership is still very high, which means we have lots of people still alive. So that is always good to see. D, how are you feeling on this last regular season episode of the season?
Doing pretty good. I got 4 of the 5 leagues locked up, really sweating the fifth right now, currently holding on to a playoff spot. Need to win this week in order to keep it that way, but hasn't been the best start to the week, I'm not going to lie. So we're hoping for a bit of a turnaround. Lots of games left this weekend. I think there's something like 75 games on Saturday and Sunday, so plenty of time to make it up. I'm hopeful. And you know what? Maybe the other matchups could swing my way and the fantasy gods will shine brightly down on me, because we might need some help this week.
I do big time like kind of how the schedulers made this one happen. Like, usually we rip the NHL schedulers because they put 8 games at 7 p.m. on a Tuesday. But to do this for us, for our fantasy guys, to give us a nice juicy back end, just have teams go at it. I love it. Also doing good over here, boys. 3 of 3 in leagues. Luckily, I got to face Brock in one of them, so I could just secure the President's Trophy last week. That really just brought it home. And but no, we're doing good. We're doing good. We are very nervous for the playoff schedule because it is bonkers. So yeah, it's just classic sweaty Biebs episode. That's about it.
Yeah, I locked up first place in both of my redraft leagues this year, which always feels good. My two keeper leagues not performing so hot, but building for the future, redraft is where it's at. 2 of 2, first place, President's Trophy, lock it up. So the fellas are doing good in fantasy hockey. We're doing good here on a Wednesday evening, Thursday morning when you guys hear this. Biebs, we were just talking about the NHL schedulers, and that is a perfect segue into what we're going to talk about. We've kind of been talking about this for a few weeks in a row now, just looking ahead to the fantasy hockey playoffs and taking a look at the fantasy hockey schedule in the playoffs. We were looking at it a few weeks ago as a whole, looking at weeks 24, 25, 26, trying to find trade targets ahead of the fantasy hockey trade deadline. Obviously, that is long gone now. At this point in time, the only roster moves you can make are add drops. So we're going to take a look again at the fantasy hockey playoff schedule just to identify the teams with the best matchups and some of the most amount of games, the most amount of games on late nights to identify which players might be the best waiver wire pickups for the fantasy hockey playoff long haul. Because obviously things have changed from when we talked about this a few weeks ago. Some teams are worse defensively than they were before, or some teams are better defensively than they are. So the top of the list, I think they were the top of the list at the time. And again, this is just for skaters. So this is based on the defensive quality of their opponents. And the best schedule moving forward is the Seattle Kraken. And the Seattle Kraken not only have the best overall schedule, but they have the best overall schedule by a mile. And not only is it good for, you know, all 3 weeks combined, but all 3 weeks are very good. Like, it's not like they have two amazing weeks and one bad week sandwich in the middle. All 3 weeks, they have a really nice schedule. They've got six of their 12 games on light nights, and they have by far the easiest schedule. So, D, we'll start with you. Like, if you're looking at the Seattle Kraken, pretty much their entire roster is on waivers. Who are the guys that interest you the most from this team if you could pick them up off the waiver wire right now?
Yeah, I mean, you said it. It's always been one of the team that you can kind of comb through on the wire pretty consistently, save for maybe the likes of Jared McCann and Vince Dunn. But I mean, can't go wrong with just going off the usage right now. And right now that's the Beniers-Eberle line still getting a ton of minutes at 5v5. Obviously, Beniers has been pretty underwhelming to the season to date. But I think Eberle in particular, his shot line has been really good lately. So I think he'd be really an interesting play. Ellie Tolvanen has been up there with the two of them as well, also on that top power play unit. So yeah, I mean, you're not going to be able to scoop, like I said, the likes of Jared McCann off the wire. So I think this, you know, best route is just going off the usage and grabbing those guys that are seeing big minutes. You know, Bjorkstrand and Burakovsky on that second line with McCann right now is the way it shakes out. You know, wouldn't be shocking to see McCann move back to the wing at some point throughout these fantasy playoffs. But I think Burakovsky in deeper leagues as well could be a sneaky ad. He's just 2% owned, and he's still kind of rounding into form. His shot volume has really picked up of late, over three shots a game across his last six. So I think he's a guy, like I said, that could really help out you or help you out in deeper leagues down the stretch. But in shallower leagues, I think Eberle is probably your best bet. I think he's available in just under 70% of leagues. And then if you're looking for some help on the back end, as long as Vince Dunn is sidelined, like Justin Schultz hasn't made the most of it yet, but he is kind of locking down that spot on their top power play unit. So if you're looking for some point production from the back end, I think Dunn sounds like he's getting a little bit closer to returning. But as long as he's out, that should be Schultz's spot on the top power play unit.
Yeah, Vince Dunn is still not practicing, but I don't think he's expected to be out long term. But certainly, whenever he's out, Justin Schultz becomes a little bit more viable. Next on the list is the New York Rangers. And the Rangers' first 2 weeks of the fantasy hockey playoffs are absolutely outstanding. The finals week, though, not so much. So they might be a little bit risky. But if you're like one of those teams where it's just like, I'm just lucky to be here, hopefully we can make a dream run to the finals here. Bit of a Cinderella fantasy story. The New York Rangers could be somebody worth picking up. Last week, we talked about Jack Roslovich being somebody that you should be giving a roster spot to and giving a little PTO to, and he's performed fairly well. In addition to Jack Roslovich, Deeps, who are you looking for from the New York Rangers moving forward for the next couple weeks?
Yeah, luckily I got a little bit of better choices here than what D got with Seattle. Just one quick thing about Seattle, isn't it? I feel like every year since they've joined the league, they are the team to have players from when it comes to fantasy playoffs. I think that their scheduler, I don't know what it is, but it's a common trend that I've noticed last 3 years. They've always had the hefty playoff schedule. So maybe something to look forward to next year, but definitely something to focus on this year. One player that you mentioned Roslovic, he's obviously one who I would say go after immediately. One player who was a little bit less owned than I expected, though, was Alexis Lafreniere with the Rangers. That's who we're talking about. 39% owned right now, though. That's kind of why I wanted to mention him. He's not quite high enough that it's like, okay, you can't get a hold of him. But he is out there in a lot of leagues. He has 13 points in his last 15 games and 44 shots during those 15 games. That's what I kind of love from Lafreniere. He is proving that he can just shoot the lights out. He's kind of given us a little bit of a glimpse of what made him a first overall pick. couple years ago. And maybe we're getting a little bit of a late bloom here, but he does look fantastic. He looks like he's really fitting in on that team as the year goes on. Another one who I want to keep an eye on is actually, if you're in a deeper league, Alex Wennberg, someone who they traded for recently. He's got 7 points in the last 30 days, so the last month or so. But the thing that's kind of stood out for me is he's got 3 power play points, and he is occupying that second power play with Roslovich. They've had a tiny bit of success early on, so it's someone very deep leagues that you can keep an eye on if you can't get your hands on someone like Lafreniere. Also, if you are a guy who is in the league, or a person who's in a league where goaltenders are out there, keep an eye on Jonathan Quick. If he's owned in a lot of leagues, but I do know as the year comes down to the late times, people will drop guys like a backup goalie. So if you can get your hands on that, certainly worth it. And finally, a shout out to Kaapo Kakko. He's really only scoring at the moment, but 3% owned. Again, deeper, I would probably take him before I take Wennberg in deeper leagues. But as far as they go, if you're in a league where Lafreniere is there, I'd almost pick him up regardless because he is just on a heater. Thank you, New York, for giving us a few options. Otherwise, though, like Panarin just cannot be stopped. So
yeah,
anyone who's playing with him.
Lafreniere has been with Trocheck and Panarin all year, and they performed really well. Lafreniere's had a really, really nice season. Third on the list here.
Going nuts now.
Yeah, it is the Edmonton Oilers. Again, another team that's got a really nice schedule in the playoffs. Mostly the finals week. They only have 5 games, which isn't, you know, there's a few teams with 6, but they have a really, really good championship week schedule, and 4 of their 5 games are on light night. So if you can get there, they have 7 light night games of the 12 remaining for them. So really, really nice schedule. D, obviously this is a team that's super top heavy with the likes of McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Zach Hyman. So there's the options are kind of few and far between, but who from the Edmonton Oilers excites you the most right now?
Yeah, I think there's only a couple of names to mention that, to your point, aren't already widely owned. You're not really going to find them on the wire in any sort of format. But Adam Henrique, you know, we talked about how his upside was probably going to take a hit now that he wasn't seeing over 20 minutes a night like he was with the Ducks in all situations. And just as we kind of anticipated, has really settled into that role as the third line center, which isn't great for his fantasy upside. I think one thing to note is they did stick Ryan Nugent-Hopkins on that line last night. I'm not sure how long that's going to last, but in the meantime, you know, that certainly can't hurt. Henrique's upside was a lot better than what he was playing with before they dropped RNH down the lineup, and he did score a goal last night. So I think in shallower leagues, probably your best bet. I don't really anticipate him getting back into that top 6 anytime soon or seeing time with the top power play unit. But in deeper leagues, I do think Warren Fogle could be a nice little addition. He's available in 93% of leagues. Shot volume has been really consistent all season long. That hasn't changed of late. He's got 13 shots on goal in his last 4 points over that stretch, and really seems to have settled in on the wing of Leon Draisaitl at 5v5. So his power play time, super inconsistent, sometimes not even on the second unit. But at 5v5, if he's rolling 15 minutes a night with Draisaitl in deeper leagues, that's going to be worth taking a punt on, especially with all these late nights like you highlighted, Brock.
Yeah. Ryan McLeod, Warren Fogle, and Leon Draisaitl have formed a pretty decent second line. Whenever that trio has been together, they've performed quite well. I think the real issue is the Oilers have seemed to be a team that likes to shuffle things around quite a bit, and you don't really know how long a line like that is going to last, especially if they lose a game or two in a row. So, they make for great streaming targets when they're there, and when they're not, not so much. But maybe the addition of Adam Henrique was really what they needed to make sure they could safely play those guys up in the top 6 and still lengthen the lineup out. A couple more teams we're going to talk about really quickly. Let's talk about the LA Kings. They're a team that have been on a bit of a roller coaster throughout the majority of this season. You know, really, really good stretch to start the season. First few months looking like an absolute juggernaut, then looking like a team that could never win a game again, and now looking like a team that has, you know, rediscovered that early season form. The first week of the playoffs, week 24, the schedule is not ideal for them. But as you head into week 25 and 26, absolutely juicy matchups. The matchups are absolutely outstanding. 4th best schedule over the fantasy hockey playoffs in total. You know, Kopitar, Fiala, Deneau, Trevor Moore, Adrian Kempe, Quinn Byfield, Pierre-Luc Dubois is heating up. Like, I mean, they've got so many forwards to choose from. Biebs, when you're looking at the wire, which guys are the most available? Which guys would you be most interested in targeting from the LA Kings?
All right, so I'm going to follow a similar theme, go under 50% for my first one, and then I'll give you guys some juicy ones at the end here. But Quinton Byfield, currently with triple position eligibility, that's center, left wing, and right wing. He's 46% owned, and he is on line 1 and power play 1. So if you can get a hold of him he's your guy that you kind of want if, because most of these other guys are in the 90s, 80% owned. So yeah, if you could get your hands on Byfield, I mean, you're pretty much getting close to the same value as you would as some other guys there. And I think that's an absolute steal. But as we look into some players that are a little bit less owned, Philip Deneau on second line, both power play and line, has been on a bit of a heater lately. 5 goals in his last 9, 7 points, kind of just showing what he could do when he just gets all that ice, because, you know, we know who Philip Deneau is. He is a two-way player, but when the offense starts clicking, it's good to get behind that. He's also a +7 during that time, and he's shooting the puck a lot more. So at 24%, he's certainly worth a look. But also, if you're going very deep, if we're looking at the below 5%, rookie Alexis Laferriere, not Alexis Laferriere, I just want to do the same-ish name. He has 6 points in the last month, which is basically the same production as they've been getting from their middle line's putting up about 8 across the board on average, but that's just a little bit less. And for a guy who's 1% owned, if you're in a keeper league, it might even be worth throwing a flyer at him. He has proven that he can get it done. He's been consistent all year long. I don't think anyone knows that this guy's even a rookie in the league, which is hilarious because he's been one of the more consistent rookies. So definitely worth a shout out there. But yeah, LA is hooking me up with some options. So I got two juicy teams there. But who else has a nice schedule in the playoffs here, Brock?
Yeah, the last team we're going to talk about next on the list is the Calgary Flames. But they don't have very many late night games, only 4 to speak of. And the schedule is pretty mediocre, and that's not a team that's scoring a ton. Like, they do have options if this is a team that you have to go to. Igor Sharangovich continues to play well. Andrew Mangiapane seems to be coming around. You know, basically their entire roster, you know, can stream. Huberto, Kuzmenko, they're all available on the wire. So they're there, but their schedule really doesn't get juicy until the finals week. So we'll probably come back to them here in a couple weeks if you're still kicking around in the finals, where the Flames will be among the best streaming targets there. But let's skip ahead to the last team we're going to talk about, and that's going to be the Vancouver Canucks, because the Vancouver Canucks have 8 of their 11 games remaining in the playoffs are on light nights, which makes them absolutely ideal. There's only one other team that has that, and that's the Vegas Golden Knights, but their strength of schedule is much, much worse. And sandwiched in between week 24 and 26 is week 25, where they're the only team that plays 2 games. So you're not really looking to stream them long-term, where the Canucks players, you definitely are. 3 games and 2 light nights in week 24, 3 games and 2 light nights in week 25, and then they've got 5 games and 4 light nights in week 26. So the Canucks, definitely a team that you're going to want to look at. And D, there are some options. We talked about them quite a bit last week, so we don't really need to hammer it home. But just remind the listeners who those guys are, because we were talking about this being the team that you want to target heading into the playoffs.
I mean, yeah, let's get the obvious one out of the way first. If Elias Lindholm, if you're in a shallower league, you're still just 52% owned, so the chance he's out there, even being buried down the lineup, I still like to bet on the talent there and him bouncing back in that situation sooner than later. I'd expect for him to be back on that top power play unit sooner than later. So even though the production's fallen off a cliff there, I think he's worth checking in on. But yeah, to your point, if we're looking at deeper or more standard formats, the name I like the most actually right now is Connor Garland. He's got 18 shots on goal in his last 6 games, playing with Pettersson on that top line alongside Nils Höglander, who's also a pretty good option as we get into, as you said, these kind of quieter nights down the stretch here, and with them just being featured so much. The power play time is limited for Garland. He's on the second power play unit, but they've been experimenting a little bit with that top unit. He's been playing really well at 5v5, so it wouldn't shock me if he gets a look in there sooner than later. But like I said, I think the 5v5 production has been solid enough, and he certainly warrants a little bit more playing time with how well he's been playing lately. Like I said, 3 shots a game over his last 6 while playing just over 15 minutes a night. Certainly worth keeping an eye on. And then Nils Höglander is just another guy that we've talked about for deeper leagues kind of all season long, just how steady he's been in a depth role for them. He's got 20 goals on the season in 67 games. And again, that's being limited pretty significantly with his ice time, playing under 12 minutes a night. So another guy certainly whose play has warranted some additional ice time. He's finally getting that opportunity, skate on the top line alongside Pettersson. Again, power play usage, not fantastic, but if Pai Suter's getting a look on that top unit, I don't see any reason why Höglander or Garland wouldn't be given the same opportunity sooner than later. So again, not guys that I would typically recommend, but to your point, just the fact that they're going to get you so many more or so many more extra games in your lineup with all the light nights that they're going to see down the stretch during the fantasy playoffs, I think they're worth taking a roll of the dice and just betting on the quantity of games and hoping that these guys, because they have performed well of late, earn themselves some more ice time.
Biebs, you had somebody you wanted to circle back to with the LA Kings before we move on.
Yeah, it was someone who I completely missed because he was activated off long-term IR or just regular IR, I believe it was today. Long-term was like 2 weeks ago. But Victor Arvidsson, currently 34% owned. He has 0 points, so he has a massive bagel if you go and look at his stats, which is going to keep some people away. But if this is a guy who has proven time and time again, he loves to shoot. He is a offensive force, and he's, you know, they're going to use him that way. So if he comes back, he's healthy, he could definitely find himself a little bit more up in that lineup, and certainly worth keeping an eye on Byfield on that top power play. Not that I think that Arvidsson could usurp him, but at the same time, if there is anyone who could and would, that is who would step in there. So keep an eye on DFO lines, as we always say, but Arvidsson's someone who's definitely interesting. If he is in a nice juicy spot, I definitely say go get him. If he's not, stay the hell away, because it's going to be a little bit tough for him coming off these injuries. He's probably only going to get 15, 16 minutes a night. But if it's 15, 16 minutes a night in great areas, definitely worth a look. So thanks for circling back to Victor for me, Brock.
Yeah, he was playing in the top six when he came back. He was actually playing like 17 minutes a night. He's probably more likely just going to end up on a line with Pierre-Luc Dubois moving forward, I would imagine. And just to remind you or to correct you there, he has 2 points on the season, but both assists. Still looking for his first goal. Okay. But the shot volume has been through the roof as normal. So that's it. That's going to do it for the preview of the fantasy hockey playoff schedule. Hopefully a lot of those players are available in your leagues. You can pick them up with your additional roster spots, because I know you've been streaming all year. You've been listening to these streamers every single week. So if you're not streaming, what are you doing?
Can we make a statement too that like most fantasy teams, you got to be streaming. Like you have to stream. It's so crucial. Like if you have a bottom of your roster guy, you don't have to, but say your roster is conducted in a way where you have a guy that you're thinking about even keeping at all, you might as well just turn that into a streaming spot, especially with fantasy hockey.
Yeah. I mean, I've been streaming all season long in my league of record. And then all of a sudden I picked up Kuznetsov and Roslovich, and I'm like, I don't want to drop these guys. These are like the bottom of my roster now. And like Kuznetsov especially has been just scorching. So we joked last week about how I was in the spot where I could have people on PTOs right now. And he definitely earned himself a long-term contract here through the fantasy hockey playoffs. Roslovich still on his PTO. But if, for whatever reason, you've already been eliminated from the fantasy hockey playoffs and you're still listening to the show, thank you still for tuning in. I understand why you would want to listen to us even if you're eliminated. But we're going to focus a little bit on some keepers right now. And obviously, we can't cover every single league. And every league's different. So the sizes are going to be... the amount of keepers you have is going to be different. We're never going to be able to answer your exact situation, but we can maybe help you decide on who to keep and just make some decisions on certain players. So what I've done is put a list of names together side by side that have had very similar seasons this year, and will pose keeper league managers some tough decisions here in the offseason heading into the fall. And maybe you are in this exact situation, and if that's the case, you're welcome. But if not, hopefully we give you enough information on a specific player that can help you make a decision next year. So we will start. Some of these guys are obviously, very, very good. And if you own them both in a league, your keeper pool might be deep enough that you get to keep both of them. Lucky you. But in the event that it is not, let's talk about Bo Horvat and Robert Thomas. To give you some background here, Bo Horvat currently 29 goals, 33 assists, 62 points in 67 games. Robbie Thomas, 23 goals, 50 assists, 73 points in 69 games. D, haven't heard from you here in a minute. Bo Horvat or Robert Thomas, if you had to pick one to keep next year?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting discussion. I think Horvat is no doubt the more reliable goal scorer given that shot volume, but Thomas, 4 years younger, he's proven himself to be one of the best playmakers in the NHL. He's a career 15% shooter and has increased his shot volume to over two shots a game this year while still maintaining an elite conversion rate. It's, I believe, the third year in a row where his shot volume has improved. So that's a promising trend for sure. I think Horvat is an obvious favorite to score more goals next season, but I think overall the difference will be negligible and more than offset by the influx of assists you're getting with Thomas. And again, like I said, he's a guy who still looks to be getting better each season he plays. I think he's still on the right side of the aging curve. So give me Robert Thomas.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you there, D. Also, Brock, I got to say, not to pump your tires, but these were very good keepers. Like I struggled through a couple of them, but we'll get through that. But no, I'm a Robert Thomas stan over here. I think the best is still yet to come for this guy. Bo Horvat, it's been a great season. It's awesome to see it, but we know with him, he's going to have to fight to get that point per game every single year. And even if he does have those little bit of extra goals, I think, like you said, Thomas is going to outlast him in the other categories. And And D, you absolutely nailed it. The shots on goal going up each year. It's such a sexy trend. We love to see that. So that's what brought me to Robert Thomas. But overall, I think next year, I also have Horvat maybe scoring 4 or 5 goals, but I got Thomas getting like 20 plus more points. So I think we're going Robert Thomas on this one. Plus the younger body, we're talking to keeper league here. Robert Thomas, 24 years old, Bo Horvat, 28 years old. Not to say it's a lot to consider, but you know, you can still get 8 more years of prime out of Robert Thomas, depending on your league's keeper ability or keeper rules and that, where Bo Horvat, you might only get 3 or 4. So if we're giving them the same window there, so just something to think about. But yeah, I think Robbie Thomas takes kick on this one. But and just general, you know, that team, the Islanders have never excited me. Any person kept on that team. Brock, yeah, how do you feel about the team?
I feel the same. Robert Thomas is the route to go here. My only concern with him would be like if the Blues decide to like dismantle the roster in the offseason. I don't imagine that's going to be the case. Like I think, you know, maybe Pavel Buchnevich gets moved out, but they do have some expiring contracts that could help bring in a couple of free agents or
Jake Neighbors getting better too
via trade. Yeah, like I do think that the surrounding cast would be the only thing that could hold Robert Thomas back, but I do expect them to continue to insulate him pretty well. And he's somebody that I have some interest in moving forward for sure. So I will agree. It is a clean sweep for Robbie Thomas. Next on the list, a couple of wingers. Different ages again. Cole Caulfield is first. He is 23 years of age. He has 20 goals, 33 assists, 53 points in 68 games. In his most recent game, he set a career high in games played at 68. So you know, durability was always the big concern with him, but he's been pretty reliable so far this year. So 53 points in 68 games. On the flip side, Kevin Fiala, 60 points in 68 games, 22 goals, 38 assists. So very similar stat lines this season. The main difference is Kevin Fiala is 4 or 5 years older. He'll be 28 in July. So, Biebs, we'll start with you on this one. Are you going with Cole Caulfield, the younger goal scorer, or Kevin Fiala, the older goal scorer?
I think we might be a little split on this one. And Brock, I hate you for putting on friend of the show, Kevin Fiala, but give me goal scorer Cole in this one, the younger player. Not that that really factors into it, but for me, the difference here, Cole Caulfield has 74 more shots than Kevin Fiala this year. And that in itself as a 23-year-old is kind of the stuff that excites me. We saw Fiala probably reached his career high in goals with 33 a couple of years ago. That's kind of where his ceiling's at. And that's fantastic. Don't get me wrong, but Caulfield's now flirted over 20 goals in 3 straight seasons. You talked about his durability. The 1 year it was just, he got sent down to the AHL. So he's not as injury prone. It was just a quite noticeable one last year, which sucked, but yeah, just seeing him play the full season this year, getting these shots. And another thing, you mentioned it kind of with Robert Thomas, the surrounding cast plays a big part for me here. I don't necessarily love Montreal head to toe, but I do love that first line of Suzuki, Slafkovský, and Caulfield. And it seems like they are cooking. They're going to cook. That's the line of the future. And when they're looking like they have, it really just excites me as a whole, because in this case, with LA being so deep, it might actually help Caulfield that Montreal is so thin, because he's going to be eating a ton of ice going forward. Like I said, I think Caulfield has the potential to be a 300 plus shot guy, and Fiala really doesn't, in my opinion. He might be able here. He's at least going to fight a lot harder than Caulfield will. So I'm going to go on Caulfield, cause I don't think we've seen the best yet, where Fiala we probably have. And I love betting on potential. You guys know you play in leagues with me. I am the king of potential, even if it just bites me in the ass every time, but I got to go for Caulfield on this one. I'm hoping we might have a split though, cause this was one of the harder ones for me, I will admit. But D, what do you think?
No, I'm with you. I'll take the elite shot volume with Caulfield. I think at times there can just be too many mouths to feed in Los Angeles, and it kind of eats into the playing time of a guy like Fiala, while Caulfield will continue to be a focal point of a young and improving team in Montreal. But yeah, that shot volume, like you said, 263 shots on goal in 68 games as a 23-year-old. That's off the charts. I think he's been pretty unfortunate to score as few goals as he has, shooting just 7.6 in the season. So I honestly wouldn't be surprised if he's among the league leaders in goals next season. And I agree with you. You don't need to play on the deepest team to maximize your fantasy production. All you need is a pair of talented line mates, and Caulfield has certainly found that in Suzuki and Slafkovský. They played, I think, over 500 minutes together this year. So I think it's one of the stickier combinations going into next season. And I love all three of their upside, and certainly Caulfield going into next year.
Yeah. And I even think, like, obviously Suzuki's been excellent, but If they can somehow get in and somebody who might be a little bit more offensive, it could help Caulfield even more. Suzuki's definitely an elite top six center, probably best suited to be, you know, more of that two-way shutdown type of forward as the guy you go to lead your offense. But nonetheless, that trio has been super, super good. And Caulfield and Suzuki have been super comfortable with each other for a number of years now. So as much as I love Kevin Fiala, I do agree. Like, I think that, you know, basically heading into next season, Cole Caulfield's floor kind of feels just as safe as Kevin Fiala's, which I don't think was the case necessarily coming into the season. But that shot volume is absolutely tremendous. And it's going to, you know, continue help him maintain an elite floor, not an elite floor, but a very good floor. So yeah, I'll go with the Caulfield potential as well. I was really hoping I would generate some splits here with some tough questions, but so far two clean sweeps. D, we'll come back to you on this one. This is probably the most difficult for me because these are two of my absolute favorites, but Matt Boldy or Seth Jarvis. So Matt Boldy obviously was one of my breakouts coming into the season, missed some time at the start of the year, 24 goals, 31 assists, 55 points so far in 62 games. Seth Jarvis on the other side has played 69 games, 55 points, 25 goals and 30 assists. So yeah, very, very similar stat lines, the exact same number of points, basically the exact same number of goals, exact same number of assists.
Just look at the time fewer, of ice.
Yeah. Just a seven fewer. Yeah. They're 1 second apart in average time on ice. I mean, they couldn't be more similar other than the fact that Matt Boldy has played seven fewer games. So it doesn't get more difficult than this. D, are you riding with Matt Boldy or are you team Jarvis here?
I think anyone who's listened to the podcast for a few years now won't be surprised to know I'm going with Boldy here. I like Seth Jarvis a lot, but I think the shot volume is better with Boldy. I think the role is much more secure, kind of similar to what we were just talking about with Caulfield versus Fiala. The Wild are a very top-heavy team, and that means they're going to need to rely on Boldy to be a major contributor next season. I think Carolina's depth at times can be a detriment to Jarvis, and I think his role atop that lineup is a lot less secure as a result. We've really seen Boldy's production spike since they put together that top line of himself, Kaprizov and Eriksson Ek, and Boldy 22 points in his last 19 games, 62 shots on goal on that stretch while playing just under 20 minutes a night. I really do think that sort of production is his baseline going into next season. That line, it's got some of the better danger chances per 60 with an expected goals for percentage of 63%. I expect them to continue to carry the Wild next year, for Boldy to continue to see major minutes at 5v5 and on the power play in a time in his career where he's still just getting better every year. I think Jarvis has got a fantastic future ahead of him as well, but I just don't believe his role will be as secure at the top of that lineup. So I will gladly go with Boldy here.
Yeah, I hate to do it, fellas, but we are 3 for 3. I'm also going Matt Boldy. But I will admit, if I'm making a keeper list, I'm pretty sure I have these guys right next to each other in ranking. They are so close. This one is actually insane. I actually thought that you went to time on ice, Brock, and we're just looking at people when I originally was going through it. But just the age, too, both being the exact same age. Like D said, you know, Boldy's got that position locked. Carolina has – we've seen so many people – let us down on Carolina over the years. Svechnikov owners are still mad at Svechnikov, ones who have owned him for the last 3 years. You know, it's just, there's too many mouths to feed. We've said it. And that's why I love Boldy. I'm with D there too. I think he's having a down year almost, but to have still this much production, it just goes to show what he can actually do. There's also a couple pieces in Minnesota that really excite me, and Marco Rossi is one of them. I think if that guy can fully click it in, he's already clicking, but if he can really click it in, we've seen Joel Eriksson Ek go off, become a point per game player. Things are kind of starting to form there, and that top six is where I like it. Carolina's top nine is so good that they have to play their top nine. That's the issue. So I'll go Boldy again, but like I said, they are right next to each other. Also, the thing that really pushed them ahead, those 28 extra shots for Boldy in seven less games, it just goes to show that he's a little bit more trigger happy than Jarvis. So we've talked about how shots lead to fantasy production. It's been what I've been preaching all day. So I'll go Boldy here, to keep things lame, but very cool.
Yeah. I'm not gonna change it either. It's 3 for 3, clean sweep. I'll go Boldy. You know, I absolutely love Seth Jarvis. Beeps, yeah. You said that you're a Robert Thomas stan. I've been a Seth Jarvis stan for a while here. But I think the one thing that's freaked me out a bit, you guys have sort of touched on it, is we've seen Seth Jarvis play with Jordan Staal and Jordan Martinuk a lot this year. And that's not a huge issue considering how much or how many minutes that team or that line plays. But still, that's not like the most offensively potent line. And if he was playing in the top six this entire season. I do think he's got probably more offensive production to this point than Boldy, but he was stuck with like Jordan Stahl for a 20 game stretch. It's just not going to do it for you.
That's tough too, because Jordan Stahl's taking all the defensive.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that means they're starting in the other end always, which is not
good. And that is the main concern. Like, if you would have asked me this question, 25 games ago when he was pretty much always in that top six, I think I would have leaned Jarvis. But Boldy, I think, is separating himself a little bit with that shuffling. Next, I mean, I'm putting you guys through the grinder here. I mean, these are some of our absolute favorite players. D, I know this one's absolutely crushing you because you've been really preaching Wyatt Johnson and Owen Tippett for a while now. And how do you decide between these two young budding superstars? They've both been absolutely tremendous. Wyatt Johnson is on an absolute heater. I mean, we talked about him a lot this year, but we talked about him probably a month ago, saying like how he's still available on the wire. You need to get him because it's coming. And he went through a cold stretch, and it's like it's gone, right? Like he has now 53 points in 69 games. Where that cold stretch was, he's completely put it in his rearview mirror and has been on an absolute heater. But Owen Tippett just been very, very good as well. 25 goals, 20 assists, 45 points in 65 games for Tippett. 26 goals, 27 assists, 53 points in 69 games for Johnson. The main difference is the shot volume for Owen Tippett. 247 shots for Owen Tippett, 178 shots for Wyatt Johnson. So, D, I mean, this is as tough as it gets for you. You have been preaching about these two for pretty much two seasons now. How do you decide between the two? And if you own both of them, who are you going?
I think Tippett certainly has his niche. He can be incredibly valuable in leagues that reward shots on goal and hits. But in general, I just think the upside with Johnson is just too good to ignore. I mean, you touched on it, Brock, 26 goals, 27 assists in 69 games as a 20-year-old. There's no major red flags in his underlying numbers. He's shooting 14.6 on the season, on ice at 10.5%. Seems to get better every single game he plays, and there is room for his ice time and his role to grow on top of all that. Just 17 minutes a night this season. He's been limited to a role on the second power play unit. He's going to take over for either Jamie Benn or Joe Pavelski on that top unit sooner than later. And I think that Duchesne line sees a lot less run next season, and we see the line of Johnson and Stankoven be on par with the usage for Hintz and Robertson. I think it might not happen this season, but I really do think within a couple of years' time, we'll be talking about Johnson as the most productive player on this team and a no doubt first-round fantasy selection. So in keeper leagues, I think you just got to hold on tight to that upside and hold tightly to Wyatt Johnson. But like I said, banger, shot leagues, Owen Tippett can certainly do a nice little job for you. But upside just too good with Wyatt.
Again, not to make it boring, but boys, give me Wyatt Johnston. I got to go with him too. 20 years old versus 25 is the first telltale sign of me going with him. That 5-year difference is quite a gap. But one thing about Johnson that really stood out this year is his versatility. If we were talking even a couple months ago when he was strict center, I would have been a little bit more lenient on Tippett just because we talked about how deep centers are. But now that he's proven that he can move in and out of that lineup, he can play on that top line. I think he's gone to a whole new level. And another thing, I haven't brought up an OHL stat all day, but Owen Tippett's career high in the OHL was 75 on pretty solid teams. And then our boy Wyatt Johnson put up 124 in a season. That's a 50-point difference. So not to say that it's much, but if we're talking keeper leagues, you got to look at these little things. These are the underlying numbers that come out in the wash. If your league is a league that does 2 points for a goal, maybe consider Tippett. But yeah, this is the one time where I'm going to say go with the guy who shoots less. But either way, I think both of these guys make phenomenal keepers again. This one was a tough choice again. Like as much as we are agreeing on all of these, they are really hard choices. And I think most of them are really either way, you're pretty much set. But yeah, this one was good. But I got to go Wyatt. Just that versatility, that lineup in Dallas, everything about it. Philly scares me too. I don't, you never know what's going on over there. He could just get healthy tomorrow. Smiling at courts the wrong way, or they'll give him an A next week and then healthy him on Friday. Who knows?
Yeah. Man, like this, I thought this was going to be way more interesting and way more fun, but this is just a clean sweep yet again. Wyatt Johnson for me, just to give you an idea of how hot he's been. He has 20 points, 11 goals, 9 assists in his last 16 games. over that span, he has 60 shots, which would be a 307 shot pace over 82 games. So like if he finally or like suddenly is like a 300 shot a season type of player or anything close to that next year, Wyatt Johnson's game just takes an entirely different step, and he's on par with Owen Tippett shot volume, which is not exactly the case at the moment. Okay, this next one's very interesting because, Biebs, you won't be able to use age as a deciding factor because they were all selected in the 2020 NHL draft. They went first, second, and fourth. They all play on the wing of their respective teams, and they are all currently in a playoff spot. We'll see if that continues. But Alexi Lafreniere, we talked about a little bit already. Quint Byfield, we talked about a little bit already. And Lucas Raymond, we have not touched on. But if you had to pick one of the three Biebs, are you going Alexi Lafreniere, Quint Byfield, or Lucas Raymond next year?
This was hard. This one was very hard. I literally had to walk away from my computer, come back to it when I was doing research, and make sure that I was making the right choice. Brock, I'm going to satisfy you here. Give me Lucas Raymond here. And honestly, I wanted to go Lafreniere. He is the clear winner in shots on goal. He gets that puck on net. And, you know, that leads to production, like we've talked about. But Lucas Raymond, there's something about the Detroit chem that's going on. We've talked about it with other lines, but I could just see him sitting there with, you know, Larkin. If they can re-sign Kane, even if they can't, that power play is just on fire right now. It is going crazy. And to see something like that, you know, it happened while Larkin's out. It just gives me excitement for the future for them. I think that he just fits the best there. I think if you're going for points, I should stop rambling. If you're going for points, Lucas Raymond. If you're going for goals, I'm going Lafreniere. Quentin Byfield, no matter what, is the third on my list because I think that he is very assist-driven, heavy, and we just, you know, we've seen as far as blooming goes, he's the latest of the bloomers. But yeah, Lucas Raymond for me here. I really, really struggled between him and Laf. But yeah, it's just that commitment that Detroit's already made to him, just consistently being on the first line, consistently being on the top power play. It's just something that I don't know I can guarantee you with Alexis Lafreniere. It just might not happen. That's a deep lineup, and they have other players who have been drafted really high who could get hot and take a spot, like Kapokako, etc. So I think the safest play for me would be Lucas Raymond, but I'm hoping we have a bit of a tear up here. D, make me and the fans happy. Come on.
I mean, I'm assuming Brock's going to go with Raymond. I'm going to go with Raymond. I'm just not sure how many minutes Byfield and Lafreniere are going to be able to carve out. Maybe should have talked about this ahead of time. But, yeah, I just think those teams are a little bit too deep. Again, it's kind of the same things we've been talking about, too many mouths to feed. I think Raymond got a much better chance to get up around 20 minutes a game. He's proven to be an elite shooter already. We've seen his volume improve of late as well. If that's something he can carry next season alongside healthy Dylan Larkin, I think we could finally see the true breakout of what we've been waiting for. Though I don't think you can go wrong with either of these three. And again, three players that I think are still getting better year to year. So probably a harder one to call, but if I had to base it just off what I think will happen next season, I do like Raymond the most. So sorry to the listeners, because we're just repeating each other at this point.
Yeah, it's awful here. I'll try to give something a little bit different. I'm definitely going Lucas Raymond, but he has been like, the Red Wings are on such a bad slide right now, and they, like, for the most part, the entire roster looks like absolute shit, except for Lucas Raymond. He has been unbelievable. He has 7 goals in his last 5 games.
He is willing them into the playoffs.
If you take a look at the last 2 months, he has 25 points in his last 24 games. He's averaging over 2 shots per game during that stretch as well. This was like a make or break year for Lucas Raymond, because what we saw from him last year wasn't great, and he's been on a heater lately. He's really turned into a game-breaking type of player over the last couple months, and if this is a sign of who this player truly is heading into next season, he could be an absolute fantasy stud. So if you have him in keeper leagues, like I think he has that game-breaking point-per-game talent that right now I'm not sure that Lafreniere or Byfield necessarily possessed to be a point per game player in fantasy hockey. So just to circle back to Lafreniere for a second, though, Biebs, they have made a pretty big commitment to him this year. He's been basically strapped to that second line. I do think that he's probably fairly secure in that top six, and he's had moments where he looks outstanding, but it's just they're few and far between, it seems. And in, you know, even while Trocheck and Panarin are having these outstanding breakout seasons, his numbers are still lagging behind. A lot of that has to do with not being on power play one. But Lucas Raymond, like you guys have already alluded to, he's the dog in that lineup right now, and hopefully that continues for the Red Wings' sake. And I do think that he could be an absolute stud next year. Okay, two more to get here.
I think that's three names that we can already say as early sleepers for next season, though. Because I don't know about you guys, but I think across the board, all of these guys are going to be a little bit.
It depends, man. It depends how Raymond finishes this season. If he somehow maintains what he's doing right now, I do think he's going to rise up the boards a little bit. The other two, I do think will still probably be slept on a little bit. But yeah, no, like all three guys, I definitely want stocking again next year. This year, I have tons of Lafreniere from the waiver wire. Raymond, I was a draft pick of mine, so feeling pretty good about Lucas's recent play. Okay, let's focus in on a defenseman and a goalie for the next two. D, we'll come back to you here. Jake Sanderson or Moritz Seider? I want to hear who you say first, because Beebs has promised us that we're going to be different on this one. So let's start with you, D, and see if Beebs is just going to change it up to change it up sake, or if he's actually got one different.
Yeah, I'm really not that high on Jake Sanderson from a fantasy perspective. So this one's pretty easy for me to go with Mo Seider. I think they're two players with very similar offensive skill sets, but I think Seider, you know, obviously the clear cut number one in that blue line, while Sanderson has the likes of Chabot and Chychrun to contend with for power play time. The Red Wings power play has been great this season, as Beebs has already touched on, 10th best in the NHL, should be very good again next season. The Senators have the league's 7th worst power play by comparison. So, we know power play time is where the bulk of a fantasy, defenseman's value and production comes from. We've got a situation where Sanderson has more competition for that power play time on a worse unit. So Seider have been more productive to date throughout their respective careers. I don't see any reason to expect anything different next season. So, again, easy decision for me. I'll go with Seider.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I just, you know, I want to shake things up a bit here. I got to go Jake Sanderson, but I do have to drop a little disclaimer here. Originally we had Charlie McAvoy on there, and I was going Sanderson over McAvoy, which people might find insane. So I'm going to use kind of the same points though for Sanderson here, I guess. But no, I think this is when we put it with Seider, I honestly think this is another case of just like two guys that are just right next to each other on the list. But I'm going with Jake Sanderson strictly because I think he has a little bit more shot potential than Seider, which in turn could lead to goal potential. This year, Seider had 111 shots on net. He capped out at 140 last year. That was his career high. Meanwhile, Jake Sanderson's going to beat that 140 this year. He's at 135 currently. He's out. He's in. So we're good. So he should just crush that that shot on goal total. And for that, I think I'm excited. I will admit I like the idea of Seider just being committed to that top power play. He should have that. And for that reason, if you want to keep Seider over Sanderson, go for it. But you know, things in Ottawa are kind of crazy. People are moving. Or there's talk of people moving out. Chychrun wants to trade every other day. If some bodies move out there, I think that Sanderson could really jump up to a similar role. He currently is only averaging 23 minutes of ice a game, Sider only averaging 22. So that goes bodes a bit better. Yeah, a bit better for Sider as well. So as we're talking here, I'm slowly starting to shift to Team Sider, but I shouldn't. So basically, I'll just say...
You broke the tie. That's all that matters.
I know. I'll just say the Jake Sanderson potential is what I would go with. But if someone, honestly, if I had to look a child in the eyes and he was asking me Sider or Sanderson, I think I would have to tell him Mo Sider.
You just talked yourself out of your argument. I love that.
I sure did.
Yeah. Honestly, I think this one's a little bit closer than D is suggesting it is, but I think there's two things that could make a difference here. One, if Chychrun does get traded, that obviously makes Sanderson more valuable. But also, Sider's had a nice year, and he's done most of it on the second power play unit. And Shane Gostisbehere is probably not coming back next year. They've got to make room for some of their young defensemen. They inexplicably signed Justin Hall and Ben Chiarot to longer-term contracts, so they're going to be taking up spots. So Gostisbehere is probably not going to return, which opens it up for Sider to be on power play one more next season. So looking ahead to next year, I do think Sider's probably got better potential than he did this year with Gostisbehere on the roster. But again, with Sanderson, if Chychrun gets traded in the offseason, then that opens things up for Sanderson. So to me, this is pretty neck and neck, and it's highly dependent on what happens. So if you have to set your keepers in May, then it might be a tough decision. But if you don't have to set them until next September or October, then we will be fine. The last one we will talk about.
Brock, I do have to step in. Mo Sider did have 187 shots in his rookie season. So I sold your boy short at 140. So the people at home are yelling at their podcast app right now. It was 187 for him. Still a number I think Jake Sanderson can attain. So on to the next.
You're like a... I don't even know what it's called. You're back and forth, though. What's that thing at a park that goes up? Seesaw. You're seesawing here.
Teeter-totter.
Teeter-totter. Yeah, that's the one. Couldn't come up with it. It was
the one with kids here. What are we doing?
I haven't. Yeah, she's not old enough to go on a teeter-totter or a seesaw yet, so I haven't been to the park yet too frequently. Okay, last one. Biebs, we'll start with you here. Pyotr Kochetkov or Aiden Hill?
Kochetkov for me on this one. I blame Logan Thompson. It's your fault, Logan Thompson. You have 36 starts this year. You are probably going to take 40 next year, and so is Aiden Hill. I think Vegas has a great thing going right now. Their 50-50 split is excellent. When Hill does play, he's phenomenal. But Kochetkov, I believe, has the more potential to take this role going forward, take it in the long run. Kochetkov's 24 years old. Aiden Hill's 27. We're talking about goalies here. I don't think that Frederik Andersen is going to stand in the way of Kochetkov for too much longer. We already saw what could happen this year. Not to say that was a total fluke blood clot injury, but Andersen gets hurt every year. It's happened since the dawn of time, since the dinosaurs came out. He gets hurt every year. So it Kochetkov for me, if we would have asked me, this is another case of a month ago, I probably would have gone with Aiden Hill, but Kochetkov's just taken such a step forward lately. I guess the last 2 months, he has truly proven that he is the number one goaltender. For a while there, I was worrying if, you know, is this guy even a backup in the league, but he now has a save percentage of 913. Aiden Hill has a 914 this year. I just think, you know, we saw what could happen to Hill when he's on a not great team with his previous teams that were very bad that he was on. And maybe not a fair example because, you know, played in San Jose, played in Arizona. But I think Kochetkov, the team in front of him, is phenomenal. I don't think that there's going to be much taking starts from him, at least not as good of a goalie as Logan Thompson. And just overall, I think now that he's proven that he can post that same save percentage, that same goals against average as Hill, I think just going forward, I would bet on him since he is still untapped potential, in my opinion. And I think Hill, we've seen the best that he can give us. And it's pretty good. Way better than I thought it was. But yeah. D, you like Pyotr? You like Aiden? Your goalie's voodoo?
Yeah, I actually lean the other way here. So there we go. We got a little bit of disagreement on the pod finally, but... I still think Kochetkov sees some sort of timeshare with Frederik Andersen next season. Andersen still on the books for next year. He's performed well this year, or he's looked good anyway since coming back from that injury. And I don't think it's an injury we have to worry about in terms of re-aggravating too much. Obviously, with the blood clotting, was unfortunate, but it seems like it's behind him now. I do think Aiden Hill has emerged as the clear number one in Vegas as they continue to turn to him down the stretch here. Thompson has just two starts in the month of March. Hill's play. It has wavered a bit of late, but I still expect him to be a very reliable fantasy option on a very good team next season that could potentially approach workhorse territory as, you know, Thompson's play continues to drop off a little bit if these last couple months are any indication. So I like Kochetkov down the road, maybe in dynasty formats a little bit more, but I think if I'm projecting for next season at this point, I would have Hill ranked above him.
Yeah, I think these two will probably be pretty similar in my rankings next year. I think this is a tough one to decide on. I'll probably lean Kochetkov slightly just because I just think the Hurricanes are going to be a better defensive team than the Golden Knights moving forward into next year yet again and insulate them a little bit better. And Kochetkov's play has really been outstanding over the last couple of months. He has a 937 save percentage in his last 12 starts over the exact same sample. An 881 save percentage for Aiden Hill. A lot of that has to do with the team in front of Aiden Hill. They've been very, very banged up. The one thing about Aiden Hill, man, is sometimes it just looks like he's never going to give up a goal. Like, he is just so big and he can be so, so dominant. But yeah, I think he's
the other
proven.
Times.
Yeah, I think he's proving that maybe last year was a touch bit fluky, but he's still been very good. I think there's a goalie that they can rely on heading into the playoffs. But it's going to be really interesting, I think, to see maybe not interesting is probably not the word, but very telling to see what the Hurricanes do in the playoffs. You know, I don't think you can roll with a timeshare. Do you roll with the experienced Frederik Andersen, who has played well since returning, or do you continue with Kochetkov, who's been absolutely unbelievable for the better part of a few months here. So even if you go back since Christmas, 928 save percentage in his last 18 starts. So Kochetkov's been great. Aiden Hill, maybe a little bit more lackluster as of late, but both, I think, like I said, will be very, very similar in my rankings heading into next year. And maybe Kochetkov, we can actually talk about being a goalie that you want to draft, not a guy who's going to start the year in the AHL going to the top 100. So that is going to do it for the back and forth. Well, not so much back and forth, just
the agreement with segment. Each other.
Yeah, the agreement segment of the DFO keepers. But yeah, let's, as always, head over now to Dylan DeBerthume, who will guide us through a hectic weekend in the NHL with D's Weekend Streamers.
All right, so we got 4 games on Friday, 11 on Saturday, 10 on Sunday. So we get to be a lot pickier than we normally would. Talked about how wonky the schedule is this weekend. You'll likely already have near a full lineup on Sunday. So we're going to highlight a couple of my favorite options for Friday night before mentioning a couple goaltenders that are worth stashing for Sunday. These skaters do also play on Sunday, but like I said, in the case that you already got that full lineup for Sunday, they still make for great one-offs for Friday night's 4-game slate. So starting off, we got the Avalanche. They host the Blue Jackets on Friday before hosting the Penguins on Sunday. Again, we're mainly focused on getting some extra bodies into your lineup when they take on the Jackets on Friday, but they do also get a nice matchup against the Penguins come Sunday. So if you're looking for an extra game or two on the last day of the slate, we got a couple of premium options for you here that may just be available in shallower leagues, but still worth a mention. Arturi Lehkonen, 49% owned, left wing, right wing eligible. He's been on a tear of late, 9 goals, 6 assists in his last 14. He's been relegated to a role in that second line of power play unit with the return of Nichushkin, which is probably what's keeping his ownership level below that 50% threshold, but you really wouldn't know it going off his production. Like I said, still constantly playing around 20 minutes a night. So I wouldn't overthink this one. I'd grab him if you are in one of those 51% of leagues where he is available. The matchups are just too good. And then Casey Mittelstadt, 28% owned, center eligible, playing alongside Lehkonen on that second line and power play unit. He's the newest Av. He's a reliable playmaker for a much worse team in the Sabres, so it's no surprise to see that production hold up so far in Denver. 2 goals, 2 assists in his first 5 games with the Avs. He played a ton of minutes. I wouldn't say he has as much upside as his linemate Lehkonen, but he is available in over 70% of leagues. A great option this weekend, and again, particularly on Friday night when the Avs host the Blue Jackets. And then moving on, we got a more widely available target here for the Dallas Stars. They are hosting those Penguins on Friday before traveling to Arizona on Sunday, so a nice matchup spread for the Stars this weekend. And it's Logan Stankoven, 16% owned, the Stinky Oven, center, right wing eligible. He's cooled off of late after a red-hot start to his career, but that's a bonus for us this weekend as it's kept him available in over 80% of leagues. Skating alongside Wyatt Johnson and Jamie Bennett, 5v5, the three of them have been outstanding together, owning the puck at even strengths, averaging over 38 scoring chances per 60, 17 high danger chances, 61% of the expected goals for, but have an unfortunate score, just 46% of the goals when they're on the ice together. So we should expect some positive regression there sooner or later.
But yeah, that's right. The rookie who has managed 9 points in his first 11, I think he's up to 10 and 12 now after a goal tonight, despite playing under 60 minutes a night, has been unfortunate to not enjoy an even more productive start to his career. So given the matchup spread this weekend, it's as good of a time as ever for that puck luck to start bouncing back their way. I'm all in on Logan Stankoven this weekend. And then we got the Kraken in Arizona on Friday versus the Habs on Sunday. A couple of guys we talked about earlier in the show. Jordan Eberle, right wing, eligible 32% owned. Matty Beniers, center, eligible 27% owned. You could throw Ellie Tolvanen in the mix here as well for deeper leagues. Both firmly on the table this weekend, playing together at 5v5 and on the first power play unit, both routinely seen around 20 minutes a night. As I said before, if you're in a deeper league, Bjorkstrand, Burakovsky, both viable options as well. Eberle and Beniers have been cold of late, but a pair of matchups against the Coyotes and Habs could be just what the doctor ordered to turn that around. Eberle in particular has been incredibly unfortunate of late, 27 shots on goal in his last 9 games, so great shot volume, but he's found the back of the net just once. So given that volume and the usage, I think he's a good bet to pad your goal totals this weekend despite that dreadful streak. And then looking at the goaltenders, we got 4 to talk about for Sunday. Yes, there is a 10-game slate, but considering how many teams are going to be on a back-to-back, there's a good chance you might be looking to get a goalie into your lineup on Sunday. And if that's the case, we're going to talk about a couple of familiar names here. Calvin Picard being the first one, 20% owned. Edmonton is in Toronto on Saturday before traveling to Ottawa on Sunday. Picard, I would say, is a near lock to start this game. I think Skinner will almost certainly get the Leafs on Saturday, which would lead Picard to take on the Senators in a game where the Oilers will be huge, huge favorites. Picard has performed very well this season, and he's been able to take advantage of some of these cushier matchups. He's got 10 wins in just 14 appearances and a .919 save percentage to boot. And then we got Semyon Varlamov, 19% owned, the Islanders' backup goaltender. They host the Jets on Saturday, the Devils on Sunday. He's got a .910 save percentage across 19 appearances. Saturday's an afternoon game, which does cast some doubt over whether or not starter Ilya Sorokin would actually be held out for Sunday's game. But I think given the fact that the Islanders are middle of a playoff race right now, they can't afford to just write off that game against the Jets. They need every point they can get. I would think they have to play the matchups and give Sorokin the game against the Jets, which would leave Varlamov to take on the Devils in a game where they should be slight favorites at home on Sunday. But of course, I would hold off and make sure Sorokin gets that game on Saturday before moving for Varlamov. Then we got Jonas Johansson, 10% owned, in LA on Saturday, in Anaheim on Sunday. His performance has been rocky at best this season, got an .888 save percentage across 23 appearances, but he looks set for a dream matchup in Anaheim on Sunday. The Lightning will, of course, be heavy favorites in that game, so if you're chasing wins and Picard isn't available, Johansson, probably your next best bet. And then we got a guy who's been the darling of this segment for a few weeks now, Laurent Brossoit, 27% owned. The Jets are on Long Island Saturday and Washington Sunday. Brossoit has been outstanding when called upon this season. He's recorded back-to-back shutouts. Only worry here is that Saturday's game is in the afternoon, so it would not shock me if Brossoit plays the front end of the back-to-back and is actually hell about getting the nod on Sunday. So again, as always, with these afternoon games on Saturday, just make sure the starter gets confirmed for it before moving to pick the backup on Sunday.
Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in, not only to Season 9, Episode 36, but for all 36 episodes, hopefully, this season. It's been a fun ride during the regular season. We're not done yet. We're obviously going to continue to chat throughout the fantasy hockey playoffs, but this wraps up the fantasy hockey regular season for us. Thank you guys all, as always, and hopefully you are riding with us in the playoffs because you have built some championship rosters on the back of this podcast. I'm your host, Brock Segan. This has been the DFO Fantasy Podcast presented to you by Betway. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you guys back here next week.
Start building those trophy holders because they're coming.
Peace.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.